Everybody, what have I been telling you for years? You need a website, and there's only one place to go to make a website. It's Squarespace. Squarespace recently launched the latest version of their platform, Squarespace 7, which has a completely redesigned interface. What? Integrations with Getty Images and Google Apps? Yes, they do. 15 new templates and an incredible feature called Cover Pages. Try the new Squarespace with a free trial at squarespace.com and enter the offer code BONKERS, that's B-O-N-K-E-R-S, at checkout to get 10% off. Squarespace, start here, go anywhere on the World Wide Web. That's not their thing, that was my thing. This movie makes me nauseous. Quote from June Diane Raphael, we saw Zardoz, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to How Did This Get Made? We are very excited to talk to you about a very important piece of art today. The movie is Zardoz. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Jason Mantzoukas, via a landline. How are you, Jason?
Well, Paul, I have a fever. I watched this movie while I have a fever, and it made total sense, I think.
Sadly, we are not joined by June. June is... technical difficulties have kicked her out of this, and she is so bummed because she watched this movie alongside of me and really, really wanted to talk about it. But we have a very special guest, somebody we've been wanting to have on the show for a very long time. He is a super hilarious, super talented guy. You've seen him on FX's show Married. You have seen him on his Adult Swim show Eagle Heart. You've seen him on his own Adult Swim specials. He's got a brand new show coming out right now called Dinner with Family with Brett Gelman and Brett Gelman's family. Welcome, Brett Gelman.
Hello. Hi, guys.
Gelman.
Jason, I didn't know you were sick.
Yeah.
Don't touch the microphone because you'll get it.
Terrible.
I want to just...
I am super sick in a hotel in Atlanta and watch this movie like, what the fuck is happening in the world? Like, I couldn't tell, like this, I would have described this movie as a fever dream regardless.
Yes.
But for me, it literally was a fever dream.
Well, here's what I wanted to kind of posit to you guys at first, right? So, the director of Deliverance and James Bond, they've partnered up. Deliverance just came out. Huge hit. I think John Borman won a directing, won Best Director that year. Sean Connery.
He may have. He also made Point Blank before this, which is an amazing movie with Lee Marvin.
Yeah. He is, you know, so he's coming out.
Great director.
Amazing director.
You cannot really say that this is poorly directed.
No, not at all.
No.
But what
it's
would
a work
you,
of art.
But what would you think, though, if you went to go see a John Borman, Sean Connery film, and then the first thing you see is this head of this man, not Zardoz, but this floating head, talking like really like, I mean, this is not an art movie. This is a, I mean, this is a mainstream released movie.
I think it's a mainstream movie, but it seems like it's an LSD trip. Like it almost feels like it's like a weird Roger Corman LSD drug movie.
Yeah, I don't want to.
Yeah.
It's very easy to say that it's drug influence.
Yes.
You know, that's like people always throw that out there when anything is in any way surreal. Mm. But I really, I agree with Jason. I think that John Borman took acid before, while he wrote this film.
Well,
I don't know if he was on acid while he was directing it, but he took it, I think, while he wrote this. Because it's just like, it's a bunch of really cheesy acid thoughts.
When I think when people say like, oh, hard sci-fi, it's so trying to be like hard sci-fi, but it's so kind of light. It's there's not that much there, but it's really being treated like, right?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the thing. I kept expecting it to like explain itself in terms of what it was positing, you know, the kind of like this kind of, you know, gods versus man and blah, blah, blah. But it never materialized into anything. It's just
Yeah.
One weird, trippy sequence under a... And also, the effects are bonkers terrible.
Oh, the effects are insane. I mean, there's much like people being trapped under clear plastic tarps. I mean, there's a lot of that.
Or under like loose bed sheets.
But I think it's what you call as just poor effects. I call top of the line design. Just wonderful design.
I mean, in a weird sense, I'm so happy that I have seen this movie from start to finish because it is unlike anything that I have ever seen that was done. I mean, this is like, could you, if you're a studio going, oh, John Borman's got this new script. Oh, what is it called? Oh, Zardoz and Sean Connery signed up. Great.
Yeah.
What does the script look like on the page?
I mean,
I wrote that. I wrote that at one point. What does this script read like? Because it is nonsense.
He might have not taken acid. He might have read a book about what it's like taking acid and the thoughts people have had. Like he read like a Richard Alpert book or a Timothy Leary book and was just like, oh yeah, that'd be great to make that into like a science fiction movie. Oh, fuck yeah. because he's using all the cliches. I almost feel like if he did write that on acid, it would be actually less cliche.
Well, to me, I also feel like I don't even know exactly what... I mean, obviously, that beginning of the floating head of Zardoz, which, let's just play a clip of it. Just so, if you have not seen this movie, I would say stop this podcast right now. Watch it.
And I just want to say before you play it, Paul, that the person speaking...
Yes.
He's the first face you see on screen. He's a floating head, and he has a drawn on his face mustache and beard.
Yes.
It's like drawn on... Obviously, it's not a real beard. It starts the movie in such a bizarre way.
And I mean, he looks like a cartoon baker.
He does. He looks like a character out of Strawberry Shortcake.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking. He looks like that purple pie maker.
Yeah, exactly. That's his mustache. Yeah. It's like Snidely Whiplash mustache. Here, just take a listen to what you're hearing. This is the opening moments of this movie.
I am Arthur Frame, and I am Zardoz. I have lived 300 years, and I long to die, but death is no longer possible. I am immortal. I present now my story, full of mystery and intrigue, rich in irony, and most satirical. It is set deep in a possible future, so none of these events have yet occurred. But they may. Be warned, lest you end as I. In this tale, I am a fake god by occupation and a magician by inclination. Merlin is my hero.
I mean, did John Borman think that... I'm sorry. Did he think that, oh, you know what? This is pretty crazy. I better film Zardoz explaining what's about to happen.
They needed to add that after the movie was first screened because no one knew what was going on. Now, I will say that I watched this movie, not like now when I listen to it, I'm like, oh, that makes sense. But when you're watching this cold, it does not make sense. I'm like, oh, no. Yeah, okay. See, like, it's so much information that they're top-loading you with that it just seems like gobbledygook. Here, I'm like, oh, I understand it now. So it makes a little bit more sense.
Yeah, but I had to constantly rewind, and I still wouldn't understand.
After this guy talks and is a floating head, they cut to the countryside where a giant stone floating head is floating through the sky. So this movie is like rotten with floating heads.
I said there's two back-to-back Zardoz monologues, and then the second one, my favorite line.
I know. The gun is good, the penis is evil.
Yes, yeah. Penis is bad.
Right. But I did, you know, I kind of saw his point, though, at that point. You know, just like with what's going on in the world, it's like, come on, let's chill the procreating. Let's kill some of the fat off, you know, of the real meat sacks.
Here's the other thing about this movie. The first time you see Sean Connery, he turns to the camera with a gun, points it directly down the barrel of the camera, and kills... The viewer is shot.
And then it goes to black.
Then it goes to black, and then it comes up on a pile of kitty litter that he crawls out of.
Inside the floating head. Oh, by the way, the floating head also after it gives its yes guns, no penises monologue, like an anorexic who's eaten a bunch of guns, or a bulimic who's eaten a bunch of guns, just barfs guns out of its mouth.
Guns and bullets.
At the people on the ground.
Guns and bullets, and just in such a large amount of them, like... Also, now that I understand this movie, why did they have to keep on refreshing the guns? Just keep on giving them more bullets. They clearly have the weapons already. Yeah.
Yeah, just maybe to get them more excited,
though. They love
just
these rifles.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you're having a bunch of bullets thrown out. It's just like, you know, they're little and it's not that impressive. You know, throwing like a double-barreled shotgun, like 40 double-barreled shotguns and like, eight, you know, 80 Tommy guns out of a big stone mouth.
Yeah.
Really, you know, it excites the people. It gives them a real bloodlust, I think.
We should also mention, just in case anybody isn't aware of this, it's the year 2293.
Yes. As the tagline of the movie states, it is, I'll read this too. It is beyond 1984, beyond 2001, beyond love, beyond death. That is the tagline.
This is
of
just
movie.
You know what this movie. It's just a constant attempt to explain paradox. That's all. It's like we live, but we're dead, and when we die, we'll really live. And the penis is bad, and the gun is bad, but they're also both good. And God is us, and we are God, and everything is nothing. Like,
yeah,
that's
man,
just
totally,
it's a constant
bro.
Like.
You're basically saying this is a Cheech and Chong movie.
I wrote down that this movie is like being in a Spencer's Gifts for 2 hours.
It looks so great, though. I mean, if bad movies now, because there's so many bad movies, bad movies now looked like that, I mean, at least we could have that, you know, at least have that.
100%.
I will say I appreciate it because there was so much in the movie that I was like, I don't know what's going on. I don't know why this is happening. I did appreciate that, like, every couple of minutes there was titties on the screen.
It was great. It was definitely like a big, like, fuck orgy. Like, fucking is the answer.
It literally turned into a fuck orgy at the end.
Well, we haven't talked about the major play of this whole thing. Sean Connery is in... A loincloth diapery thing that goes around his cock and balls and then goes up around his shoulders. But he's basically just in a red diaper, the entire movie.
He's in red briefs and then has red matching red
suspenders
bandolier that goes around his chest full of bullets.
And he is a
and
guy
a giant ponytail
who does not. Give a fuck. Like, you know, like I feel like now if that was a character you'd cast somebody, they'd really work out to be like, because he's basically naked. And Sean Connery's like, fuck it, I don't care. I'll just wear, like,
true, Paul. I think he's just in 70s shape.
Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
I think he's in 70s shape. But, I mean, he looks great. I mean, he looks hot.
I think, like,
he's fucking hot.
Like I say a lot of people in this movie exude a raw sexuality. I mean, they do. Like, Sean Connery's instinct to most women is just to begin to rape them at points.
Oh, yes. Oh, no. That I wrote that down. One of the very first revelatory things you find out about Sean Connery is that he is a wanton murderer and a rapist.
Yeah.
Because they go into his memory and they continuously throughout the movie replay him raping a woman in a net. And he is the protagonist.
Yes, and they keep on playing it over and over again. And it's such a sloppy, like, he puts a net on her like a weird jungly net and gets her down. And it's so upsetting. This is our hero.
Oh, yeah.
This is
an era. It's kind of, I feel like Clockwork Orangey. This is an era when it was like, no, bad men rape women and then are redeemed.
But why he's redeemed, and how he's redeemed is because he reads books. You find out towards the end of the movie that he's a reader. So it's cool.
But by the way, even after he's a reader, when he meets the apathetics, we'll get to it, he like grabs that woman and he's like, The apathetics are not moving. And his first instinct is to grab at her breast.
Yep.
And then he's like, she won't react. You can do whatever
you
want.
He's, you know, supposed to be like, he's basically like a barbarian. You know, like,
yes.
We're led to believe that the oh God, I can't believe I'm even going to say this, that the people in the Vortex are the enlightened people, and the Outlanders, or whatever they're fucking called, they are basically just barbarians.
The Brutals.
But if he has this knowledge, his barbarianism has not gone down at any point. It's still at an all-time high. He can read and he's still a barbarian.
The amount of mythology that they pack, they pack like 6 Lord of the Rings books into 2 hours.
If Peter Jackson did it would be 8 movies.
Peter Jackson should remake this.
Oh my God, I would like to start a petition right now for Peter Jackson to remake Zardoz.
Oh my God, that'd be incredible with Sean Connery still as the guy.
Can I actually tell you guys some facts? I have so many facts about this movie. Did you know that Burt Reynolds was the first choice for Zed? But bowed out at the last minute due to illness.
I wish that had happened. anything else.
What was the illness? I can tell a shitty script when I see one-itis. Borman's gone insane disease.
He's like, I work with this guy in Deliverance. This is a movie, a sci-fi movie? Yeah, sure. I would have loved to have seen him in, but this is the best other little fact, too. Borman also offered the role of Zed to Richard Harris, but Richard Harris never responded.
Oh my God, that's also amazing.
You don't want to, you know, I feel like if I got that script from somebody, I think that they were going to kill me.
I would have reservations about that person if they gave this movie to me.
Yeah, of course.
I'm reading this. This is so funny. Borman made this film on the rebound after Lord of the Rings was canceled. So Borman was supposed to go make Lord of the Rings, basically.
Oh, even better.
Oh, really?
Yes. So this was his attempt at something like equally as fantastical and mystical.
My God.
That's really interesting. Wow.
I think that this movie is incredible.
I do too.
I love this movie.
I am in the same camp as you. I said to June today, I was like, I am so happy that I saw this.
Yeah.
It is so different and so weird.
So it's so 70s. This movie is so like trippy, psychedelic 70s cuckoo and craziness.
It's also, though, I mean, it's, like, super hot, though. I mean, I got, like, really turned on so many times. I mean, Charlotte Rampling in this movie is so hot.
Charlotte Rampling is so hot in this movie.
She's
I mean,
great.
And she's one of my favorite actors, too. I think, like, she's a genius actor.
Oh, she's amazing.
Charlotte,
but
she's,
I mean, I'm like...
But I will say this. I could not tell you what her role in the movie is.
No.
I don't know what her character's... I don't know what she wanted. I think she loved him, but I think she was trying to kill him for a while.
Well, she was trying to kill him because I think she was trying to keep society together, but she had this attraction to him. You know,
she gets all the way there with the knife, and then she's going to kill him, and then immediately like falls to her knees and is like,
and realizes that she loves him. She's young here, really young. She's probably like towards the beginning of her movie career.
I love that Gelman's trying to justify her insane behavior.
Well, by the way, look, this is a good, like, Sean Connery's a good actor. Borman's a good director. But here's something interesting that Borman said in the director's commentary, which there is one for Zardoz. We'll play some clips of that later. He is kind of Zardoz. Borman said, Charlotte was disappointed. She was really looking forward to being raped by Sean Connery.
Oh, God.
What is that?
What are you talking about? This movie is so weird.
Also,
he gets into he's like some Outlander savage who gets into like the bubble that is like in there. It is literally in a bubble.
Yes.
That is like the learned people. And he instantly, for some reason, becomes their slave.
Oh, yeah, and they call him, like, what do they say to him?
Beast.
Oh, yeah, right? Yeah, they go, get up, get to work, monster, or whatever.
A monster, yeah. And
Yeah, morning monster. That's what they say.
Let's also not forget that Sean Connery is a man who, in an interview with Playboy, talked about how it's okay to hit your wife.
Yes.
Absolutely.
If she gets out of line, which makes this movie even more disturbing, especially during the rapes.
Yeah, he is a abuser. He did not find this man a savage. This is just,
no.
Just doing normal stuff.
Oh, no. He falls into, like, aggressive sexual situations at every turn in this movie.
I'll do it if I get to hit one woman.
Can we just talk
about... get to hit one bitch right in the face.
LaShawn, Burt Reynolds fell out of this movie. I want you to read this script. I don't need to read it. Will I get to rape someone? Well, you do, actually. Yes, I'm in.
What about the part where, and for no reason, and like you said, there's so many different things going on, but at one part, Charlotte Rampling is giving a lecture to everyone about erections.
Oh, my
and
God.
And how flaccid penises...
And there's, like, pictures of penises, like, on a rear projector behind her.
Because people can't get hard now anymore.
Right. Well, doesn't she say it's like an act of fear? It's an impulse of fear or something?
I'm sure she did. I may have missed that.
It's such nonsense. How about when the character known as Friend? Let's talk about Friend.
Friend.
Like, how about that? How about that scene when he walks into the kitchen where they're making?
Oh,
like, they love making bread, and he walks into the kitchen and he turns to the bread makers, and all of a sudden he's speaking gibberish, just like
It's like his dialogue is played backwards.
But he's like, but he's received like a stand-up comedian has come in there to do like a little act.
Like, it's like George Carlin just like walked in
Why did they attack him?
That was interesting.
Oh, because I kept rewinding this because I was like, wait, why are they killing him? Why do they?
Yeah.
And I think it's because he just decides he doesn't want to go to that level of meditation that they want to go to. He refuses to go. So I guess that's the last straw. They're like, you're always breaking the rules. You're not a part of us. You're cast out. That's what
and
I get.
Cast out, okay. They age him. That's the deal, is that they age you. Well, that's your punishment, is to be aged.
He's like killed, though, and then he somehow, I mean, does he teleport into that other house he's then aged?
I don't think he's killed. I think they just make him older.
Yes, because the punishments.
They can't die. They're all immortal. Right.
The punishments are all about adding age to you. So they may have aged him by like 60 years, and now he's going to be forced to be insane and old, which is different than the other people who are also banished, but they're apathetic. So there's old people in a party.
What are the old aggressive people called again?
I wrote this down.
Was it like the malicious or something like that?
Yes, there was something like that. It was,
I don't remember.
Too many things to remember in this movie.
Kind of movie that and it's so not surprising now that you tell me that Borman was supposed to do Lord of the Rings, that is trying so hard to create a mythology.
Yeah.
You know, it's working so hard to give names to everything, you know, like what's the crystal called? It's the room, it starts with a T.
Tabernacle.
The tabernacle.
There's the tabernacle.
Like, what?
And that has certain power. And then everybody's oh, by the way, Lord of the Rings, everybody's talking into rings in this movie.
Oh, interesting.
Right. That's right.
Everybody talks. The way to talk to God or the tabernacle is through a crystal ring on your finger.
Yeah, that looks like
everybody asks questions of the ring, and the ring answers them. This movie's fucking dumb.
I mean, it's crazy.
It's basically what he's like, okay, if I can't do Lord of the Rings, I'll do a Lord of the Rings that's fueled by hippie spirituality.
Which is, I think,
I'll do Orgy of the Rings.
Well, to me, maybe it's like what the idea was, is like Lord of the Rings was like came out of like World War I, am I right? Or World War II? Yeah, World War I, like, and what was going on. And then this is like coming out of Vietnam, and it's like, oh, I can create, I have them name same moment. By the way, the old people are called the Malicious and Vicious, and they're the Renegades.
Right.
Yes, they're the Renegades. And so the Renegades are Malicious and Vicious, and then the Apathetics.
The Apathetics.
But
the Malicious
and Vicious just hang out in like a black tie party, dance but hall. They're like, yeah, dance hall. Like, I don't understand what that was.
Well, they are the people they chose to make the tabernacle. They built the tabernacle to give them everlasting life. And then I guess asked the tabernacle to erase the memory of yes. how the tabernacle was constructed.
And by the way, we do get into the tabernacle.
And then, yeah. But then they were like, well, we don't want to have everlasting life anymore. So then they were punished,
yeah.
I guess, by the other people who still wanted it and made old.
Because they're saying the idea is if you have everlasting life, all the things that you want to do, you'll never actually do them anyway because you can't solve all the life's mysteries just because you have all the time.
Oh, yeah. Like, ever go to space before?
Yeah.
Yes, been that, done that. What was that scene?
Oh, yeah. Her friend is like, spaceship, and it wasn't very interesting.
Yeah. Didn't do anything up there either. Like, wait a second. You went to space?
This movie reminds me of that British TV show, The Prisoner.
Yes. Oh, yes, yeah.
That, remember,
oh,
like,
all the balloons.
The secret agent who's stuck on an island for old secret agents, and there's, like, the security system is a bouncing plastic ball and all that.
Yeah. No, it's funny that you bring this up because
this movie is just like that, only it makes 1 million times less sense.
Well, yeah, I mean, the Prisoner is a quality show. Yes,
it's a wonderful show,
well,
but
written.
It has similar, really surreal elements
to it. Yeah, that's what I was thinking. I was going to bring that up, that there is something just so...
Well, I did it first, Gelman, so fuck you.
Well, I'm going to do it in a different way. I'm going to, you know, we're in this together, man. Why don't you chill the fuck out, Jason? I know you're sick, but you don't need to take it out on me, asshole. No, that it's so distinctly British in this very, like, ooh, British type of way where even the things I love, they have this, like... This British grayness to it.
Yes.
That is so, I mean, it's an incredible aesthetic that is really influential on me. But like, you know, like Time Bandits has that
yes.
too.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It feels a little bit more like art, like college filmy, like put together, like more glue. It's not like,
yeah.
it's like Star Wars looks very much different than like Time Bandits. It's like, just like, right. I don't know, like more like let's put on a show element or
well,
something.
It's like everybody's, you know, a mythical creature, but they're wearing a suit.
Yes.
Type of thing. And the walls are gray. I mean, even like blue looks gray in a way.
Yeah.
It's just very like, ooh.
I found something interesting here about Borman shooting this movie. By the way, Borman also wrote a book of Zardoz where he combines earlier parts of the script and really gets into the backstory of Zed a little bit more. So
we should do that.
I would love
to. Like they did Gats. like that theater company did
yeah.
Gats, the Great Gatsby. Call it Zardoz.
We should do a movie that's an adaptation of that book.
I would do this in a heartbeat.
We've never written a script together. I think it would be great. Let's write that together.
I would love it.
Studios, if you're listening, come on, snatch up this deal. Three comedy heavyweights offering you a bunch of dough.
We've tried this with Sharknado. They did not take us up on it. Borman apparently, they shot in Ireland, and Borman apparently were grabbing Irish travelers who were visiting the countryside and making them act as extras in the movie. And he is quoted as saying they're the best extras he's ever used. So he basically was taking people off their vacation and making them shoot this
wow.
insane movie. And
well, the scenes of Sean Connery and his the Brutals or whatever they're called, the Outlanders or whatever, just riding horses on the beach and shooting people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were crazy.
They were so violent and disturbing. I mean, the violence is really disturbing.
Oh, really?
Really disturbing.
Well, I mean, even like in stuff that he says, like at one point, you know, he goes blind. Sean Connery.
Yeah. Why did that happen?
He goes blind because having sex with
he's
going to
have sex with Freckles.
Freckles. Consuelo.
Yeah, who is great.
Yep,
that actress is great in the movie.
And was she having sex with him to access his memory? Was that what was going on?
I think
on?
She got so. Turned on because he accessed it.
Okay,
I
got
felt.
It. So there, and then Charlotte Rampling finds them.
And then Charlotte Rampling finds them and is like, is this what your scientific research is?
Right.
Yes.
And then she tries to aid Sean Connery, but Connery blocks it, but it makes him blind.
Because also she says, the thing you should know, and this is, again, this sounds like an insane person telling you this, in this world, looks can kill. As friend tells Sean Connery, he goes, you ever heard that expression, looks can kill? Well, here, it happens, you know? And it's like, they can stare at you and you can hurt you.
And that phrase is the only phrase that stuck around into the future. Looks can kill.
Have you ever heard the phrase, looks can kill? Yes, it's 2293, but that phrase is still around.
Have you ever heard the phrase, where's the beef?
OMFG. he goes, so Sean Connery goes blind, and then he quickly falls into a bunch of sewing thread, and he knocks over like all these like looms, and this is the line that stuck out to me. She restores his sight, and she's like, "You will see now more. You will see better." And then his first line is, "I see men rape an old cripple woman in a ditch."
Oh my God.
That was his first line after being blind. Like,
God.
I feel like Connery improvised that line and Borman was like, brilliant.
Yes. Very good. More acid, please, Sean. More lines like that.
Here's the deal, people. Building a website can be tough, like really tough, like for smart people who went to school and can charge you thousands of dollars, tough. And if you don't know your way around coding, building a website that looks good is not going to be in the cards, okay? And yeah, I have a blog. Oh, really? Nice blog. It looks like shit, okay? You need to have something that shows you off in the best way possible. But it doesn't have to be time-consuming either, okay? So what I'm telling you to do is hook up with my friends at Squarespace, okay? Squarespace is the only way to build beautiful websites. Why don't you listen to me, okay? Look, I know you've heard Squarespace, but have you heard about the new version of Squarespace? Squarespace 7, okay? Brand new designs, 15 new templates, and so much more too, okay? It integrates with Google Apps, so you can connect it to your Gmail, Google Drive. It's amazing. You can get Getty Images on there now and pay a fraction of the price. You got beautiful design, 24/7 support, responsive design, commerce, and guess what? Here's the kicker. Bend over right now and get ready to get kicked in the A. You get $8 a month. All that for $8 a month. So start a trial with no credit card required and start building your website today. When you decide to sign up for Squarespace, make sure you use the offer code BONKERS. That's BONKERS to get 10% off your first purchase. And show your support for our show by doing that. We thank Squarespace. We thank you. Everyone thanks each other. Now go build a website. Squarespace, start here. Go anywhere. I've told you this. Now do it.
Wait, so when the girl brings his eyesight back,
yes,
she gives him a leaf to eat, and when you need it, eat the leaf.
Because he's being overcome by the apathetics wanting to fuck him.
Well, because they're stealing
so
his life.
He eats the leaf, and he's able to not give in to his base desire?
Yes, I guess so.
But they don't explain it, and it seems to be like he's weak, and that leaf didn't give him any more energy, though. He's pretty weak.
Connery, I just want people to understand, in this movie, Connery is... like, his raw sexuality is so transformative that there is a race of people in the vortex called apathetics who are truly apathetic, and one of them licks a droplet of his sweat, goes into, like, a sexual frenzy. They all lick his sweat, and they try and have an orgy.
I don't think an actor has been more sexualized in any film than Sean Connery is.
No.
I mean, essentially every other character in this film wants to fuck him.
Oh
my God. Yeah. I mean, every character. Single person, what? Every woman in this movie
every
is
man.
Set for
every,
Connery.
Yeah, and by the way, one of the best scenes, which we kind of talked about before about the erections, this is a great scene too. Like, he's standing there, they're all looking at him, and like, does this excite you? And they just show like this woman with soapy breasts, like massaging her breasts in the shower.
Yeah.
And he's not getting aroused. And then it was like,
twisting together, and then
the final image was nothing on the screen, and him just staring at Charlotte Rampling, and we're to understand that we see like a little line on the screen that he's getting a raging hard on, just staring at it.
Everybody looks at it. Everybody's like, whoa.
Now, okay, here's a question for you guys.
This movie should have been called Boner Town. Go ahead.
It is kind of. Man, I jacked off like three times.
No, I did say to June, I said, this is a very sexual movie. She's like, no, it isn't. This is terrifying.
Exactly. That's because that shows that one of us three could become John Borman easily with just a couple of nudges in the wrong direction. A
couple people just going, you're great.
Yeah.
And Deliverance is so down the middle as far as, it's a great movie, but it's like, there's nothing sci-fi about it. There's nothing out of the ordinary. Well, there is rape in it.
It's a straight narrative.
Now, here's my question. Okay, so we reveal in that knife scene that where Charlotte Rampling can't kill Sean Connery because she finds out she's actually in love with him. So we find out that this whole – and she leads the manhunt against him until this moment. She is the most against him, and we find out she's so against him because her desire to love him is so great. Her aggression is just her fear of allowing herself to love Sean Connery. So – do you think that we turn the corner in that erection scene where when she looks at his cock and she's visibly shaken? Is that the moment where she falls in love with Sean Connery?
That's my question. I don't even know how we could even begin to answer that.
I gotta say that Brett may be right, because she's a woman who doesn't believe in sexuality, but I think in that moment when he's staring at her, they connected on a deeper level, and that was it. And that was the first time she's ever felt that.
It's that moment where Meg Ryan realizes she loves Billy Crystal. I think
New Year's Eve moment from Harry Met Sally. Yeah, exactly.
Are you telling me that this movie is a fucking romantic comedy?
It has all the elements of a romantic comedy.
That's another thing we could do. We could make a Zardoz romantic comedy.
I would love to just go back to that world. Just kind of get it out. Because I love also the hand gestures in this world. Hand gestures in this world are a pitcher and a catcher communicating. They're like, whoosh, 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 whoosh. And they're speaking like they're just they're deciding like verdicts and years and everything.
Wait, what about this, guys? Yeah. I mean, one of the laziest reveals in movie history.
Yeah.
I mean, it's your guy. I don't, I'm just a guest here. No, I don't want to overstep my bounds.
No, you're not. Go for it.
I mean, you realize that Arthur, what's his name? Arthur Schechter or something, who is claiming to be Zardoz. Arthur Frayne is Arthur Schechter. Arthur Frayne is posing as Zardoz because, and he got the name Zardoz.
Yes.
From The Wizard of Oz. Sean Connery realizes this when he's on his reading spree.
Yes.
And is reading The Wizard of Oz and accidentally realizes that if you cover the WI on the left,
you get Zardoz.
Can
we actually play that clip? I don't know if it will read as good, but it's pretty funny to hear it. The Wizard of Oz.
I think it's meant to like blow your mind.
Yes. Oh, 100%.
It's like the Sixth Sense. It's like,
guys, do you get it?
Get it? I told them about the book.
Show it. What is the book?
No.
Zardoz
is pleased.
So that was it.
The Wizard of Oz. Zardoz.
He goes into the whole explanation, though, like really laying out the metaphor.
Does it
though.
Continue or no? Does it just go, that's it?
Then he's like, I read that book and I realized that Arthur Frayne had read it as well. And that book was about an old man who was behind a curtain and showed a projector of a giant head, a projected image of a giant head. It just is.
And
it's
by the
unreal.
Way, Arthur Frayne's plan is so poorly concocted. He lures him into a makeshift library, teaches him how to read with the most simple of books, like a book that's like C for cat, D for dairy. And then we are to believe that he reads every book in this library until he stumbles upon Wizard of Oz, which is a very, like,
I don't know if that's true, because he does. I don't think he reads everything, because later in the tabernacle or whatever the fuck it is, all of the people have to give him all of the knowledge of the world.
Oh, right.
Yeah. Oh, right.
And that's remember when Charlotte Rampling's trying to break in, they have to, like, surround him in a circle and, like, be like, E equals MC squared, blah, blah, right. blah.
Oh,
and,
yeah. Oh, that montage. Spanish
and, you know, they have to
Give him, like, the Matrix move.
Yeah. That montage is genius. That is filmed so beautifully.
Everything
is.
Everything about, like, this is a movie that I feel like should be played at a hip and trendy restaurants and clubs. Like, whenever you go into a place, like, well, what's that? Well, I've never seen that. It's like, it's visually.
It's kind of like, it's akin to, like, El Topo or Alejandro Jodorowsky movies. You know, like, it has that same kind of, like, cuckoo crazy, psychedelic, weird, but still, like, semi-narrative. I don't know what the fuck is going on.
And we have to just make sure that we say the one part here, too, which is, like, we will touch teach you, and you will give us your seed.
I mean, there's...
Oh, yes.
Oh, my God. There's so many contradictions.
It really,
in every scene, because there's that other scene with Freckles where she says, you are better than me mentally and physically, huh? And you're hiding that from us. So at one point they say that he's superior to them.
Well, that's the thing that was so confusing. And, like, and they wanted his seed, but they...
Right.
But then why did the group want the seed? Why didn't just Charlotte Rampling?
Okay, the movie ends. At the end of the movie, he impregnates all of the women.
What is that? What is that thing? Is it? Is there a famous two skeletons together? Like, I know there was on Lost, but I thought there was maybe an archaeological dig, too. It's like two skeletons holding hands or something like that.
Oh, right. I don't know. Oh,
okay, so, but probably not. It's probably just from Lost. I'm a terrible person.
No, it's that famous archaeological dig from Lost.
Yeah, but, like, the end, basically, it, like, they get to this cave. They live together.
Paul?
Oh, yes.
Paul, are you positing that this entire movie takes place in purgatory?
I'm saying that this actually was the creation of the Lost Island from the TV show Lost.
It's got to be. I mean, it's got to be influential in some way.
I mean, it's very much Matrixy too. It's a Matrix stole from this. Lost stole from this.
I mean, they're all taking, like, mythical types of, you know, and Eastern ideas and Western ideas and just mashing them together.
Well, the end though is like, she's immediately pregnant with a seed. They have a baby. All of a sudden, they change into these green, like, leprechaun outfits. And it's these, like, flash frames of, like, the baby is now a baby. The baby is now 5. The baby is now 10. The baby is now 20. And the baby gets more and more clothed through all the thing. And then finally, like, Sean Connery and Charlotte Rampling are, like, really, really old.
Right. And they both still look hot, though.
Yeah, they look pretty great. And then they leave. And then they die.
And then they die. But they appear to do all of that while living in a cave.
Exactly. Yeah. And the boy goes off to do what?
Where does he go to be alone?
You know what? My idea? To become Conan the Barbarian.
Oh, I like that.
Nice, man. So that's how we'll play it. We'll do Zardoz, and then we'll do Conan. We'll call it Zardoz 2, Conan the Barbarian.
Can I just tell you this? Yep. With the end, this is kind of a funny thing, too, just on the film production side. The scene where Zed and Consuela turn into skeletons had to be shot 3 times. The first time, the film was damaged. The second time, a studio helper exposed the negatives. And then the third time it worked, but Connery and Rampling were so extremely annoyed because they had to get that intense makeup done to them like 3 times in a row.
Oh, no.
So
could you imagine? Nobody fucking looks me in the eye today. God damn it. I was a fucking sport about this the second goddamn time.
And they said that Sean Connery at this point couldn't get a job after James Bond, so Borman basically hired him very cheaply.
Really?
He only was paid $200,000 for this film, which is very low at the time.
Why is that?
He couldn't get roles.
Was Bond a flop?
No, I think it was a sort of, he couldn't break out of that mold.
It was like his...
Oh, I see what you
mean.
It was
like his Kramer.
Yeah. It was
Bond was Sean Connery's Kramer.
This is another movie in the How Did This Get Made canon, which features the most manly men cross-dressing for some reason.
In the wedding dress.
Yes.
The wedding. Oh,
they were had him in disguise, I guess, because a lot of people wanted to kill him.
Yeah,
exactly. But this has become like a real a real thing that we find over and over again is really manly men have to put on dresses in movies to like get away with something, and there's always some joke made about it.
Well, and I think it's sort of like them kind of, although Sean Connery apparently had to be forced into that dress according to the DVD commentary, but I feel like but I do feel like there is like
I'm not putting this on.
no
fucking way. No. Am I going to look like a little girly girl? Are you fucking kidding me? I'm James Bond, goddammit. And I tell you this,
yes,
I tell you this,
but I will not say yes to this wedding dress.
I'll shoot you in the head, but not with this dress.
You shoot so many people in this movie.
Men and women. Many women. Okay, guys, let me tell you something. We have a brand new sponsor that I love. They are called Framebridge, right? Let me tell you what they do. Now, it's nice to get some framed art or posters on your walls, but it's pricey and cumbersome at best. Well, lucky for you, today's episode is brought to you by Framebridge, because here's the deal, guys. You can upload your art to Framebridge, okay, or just mail them a physical piece, and what they will do, okay, is they'll frame your art and deliver it to your door, framed 70% cheaper than store-bought frames and 200% cheaper and more convenient than any place else you could ever go. Look, they'll even suck off a picture off your Instagram and just frame it for you. These guys are the real shit. They framed some stuff for me. I love Framebridge. So go to framebridge.com. Use the discount code HOW for 15% off your first order. And it also makes a great gift. So, you know, want to send something to your me? I don't know. It's my birthday, whatever. I like gifts. You could do that. Just the offer code is HOW for 15% off at framebridge.com. Why are we waiting here? Framebridge is the answer that we've been looking for. I want to, we don't normally play something this long. It's about a minute, but it's worthy of you guys to hear because this commentary track is pretty amazing. And I want you to hear John Borman. Just, these are kind of a mashup of some of the favorite thoughts that he expresses. And I think it will just help us for a second. Here we go.
My name is John Borman. I wrote, directed, and produced this movie. And this particular scene, this that you're looking at now, is one that I tacked on afterwards because in an attempt to explain the picture to audiences which didn't seem to understand what the film was about. So this the idea of this little scene was to make things a little clearer. It didn't work because people still found the film difficult to understand. You have to look at it in a particular way.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got this. It can be very laughable, really, if you don't enter into the spirit of the thing. It can be quite kind of ludicrous.
And then here,
when I see the film now, I'm astonished at my hubris in making this this extraordinary farrago.
Wait, there's another good one.
You could say there were maybe too many ideas in this picture. I'll cut this down a bit if I was doing it again. It's a little bit too long. I was terribly pleased with it at the time. Couldn't bear to lose any of these shots. But I could certainly be a little shorter. So you can fast forward this bit if you want to.
It's a fast forward.
You can fast forward this bit. I love how he just hates it more and more as he keeps talking about it. Oh, God, that's great.
It's really great that he has a full commentary track as he's going
to
live.
Now I kind of want to just listen to that commentary.
I mean, he's a brilliant filmmaker. He's a legendary filmmaker.
And by the way, this is somebody who's looking at his own work. I mean, there's things in this movie that I will highly recommend. So you need to see that because it's unlike anything because I think he is so talented. And people, are not phoning it in. Like, I don't even think that Sean Connery is phoning it in.
This movie is very well made.
Yes.
It's ideas. Like he says, there's too many ideas in it. It's just that there are so many ideas, and so many of them are so confusing that it really just doesn't add up to anything, and it's also wildly dated.
I mean,
Just the ideas, they cancel each other out.
Well, obviously, we had an opinion about this movie, but there are some people that have another opinion. It is now time for second opinions.
These are second opinions from top to bottom. Crazy movies are fun.
Okay. These are second opinions. These are reviews culled from Amazon. These are 5-star reviews of Zardoz from different types of people. This is an opinion right here. from Thomas B. Nost from the mountains of WNC. Confusing to some, incomprehensible to others. It was wonderful. The death of a feminized world. 5 stars.
All right, okay.
So he likes that.
The death of a feminized world. Well,
there we go.
Don't really want to run into that guy in a bathroom stall, you know? get your fucking throat slit.
This one goes a little bit darker. Cameron Miller writes, "Is mankind doomed? Not if we heed this cautionary tale. However fantastic and hallucinatory it may seem, the allegory projects extant class warfare through a kaleidoscope envisioning of human will to power, like if the prodigal son returned to some sort of nihilistic Oedipus. Zardoz will likely disappoint the polite viewer who clings to decency and sobriety, as well as the vulgar, boorish many, as both have become effigies burnt by this film."
Five stars. So, again, like the last one, starts off like, okay, yeah, I get it, I even agree, and then, oh, you're psychotic.
Polite people and vulgar people will not like it. Fine, this is my favorite one. This is my favorite one.
Just the violent boars will be burnt to a cinder. What was that?
Said that the vulgar and boorish may be the vulgar and boorish and the polite will both become effigies burnt by this film.
Yes, burnt effigies. How what a lovely thought. I'm sure that's what John Borman wanted him to think or her to think.
And then Marissa Helmuth from Hamburg, Germany writes, okay. "Throughout this film, I was looking at the outfits. I love the outfits. I love the house it was shot in. It's also nice to see Sean Connery gets to make out with lots of different women. That's how I feel, and I'm not good at writing reviews. Sorry."
That's great.
5 stars.
That's a great review. That's totally true.
That is a great review.
I think all three of these reviews, I agree with elements of all of them.
They really, oh my gosh.
I would definitely give this movie 5 stars, without a doubt.
I would give it 5 stars, too. I'm not going to do it right now while Brett and Jason are here because I value their time, but I will, if you wait until the end, I will read you, there's a very long, like, how this movie is the perfect Nietzschean movie. It's a very well thought out, I mean, you know.
They quote Nietzsche in it.
A lot.
They say, if you fight dragons, you yourself will become a dragon.
Yes. Yeah, that is true.
That is the Nietzschean quote.
Are we positing the idea that Sean Connery is Nietzsche's Ubermensch?
Well, I'm going to tell you,
He's the Superman.
It says, Nietzsche tells us of a savior that is the Ubermensch, a Superman who will shake off the sterility of the last men to push them back into this meaningful and necessary movement on history, launching a new cycle where others pretend there is only a single line from beginning to end. Incidentally, a new cycle means for both shedding and mortality. You see why I'm not reading it right now.
Yeah.
But it's very intense.
Wow.
So that I will read that for you at the end if I can get through it. I mean, lots of tarps, lots of plastic, lots of ideas. I want to read the book.
They really use a lot of plastic.
A lot of plastic.
Has there been more plastic in the movie?
Why were the people wrapped in plastic in the giant
head? That's like the Matrix thing where that's the embryos are growing there.
Well, what I thought was, okay, about Friend. When Arthur Frayn was killed, his fetus appeared in one of those plastic embryos.
Yeah.
So what I thought about Friend was killed and then reappeared in an embryo in the malicious house.
Yes.
But immediately as an older man.
Oh, interesting. I thought they just kind of zapped him. He became old and then they carried him over to
that. Yeah, that makes more sense.
Because it's easy to get from place to place because, like, when Sean Connery is acting as a horse to Friend when they're passing out bread to everybody, they kind of run into that room really quickly and then run out.
Yeah.
there is one thing. Oh, at the end when when Sean Connery's army of, like, savages break into the vortex world. They start, like, shooting people, and the violence in this movie is very, very. I mean, this sounds It's very extreme. Like, you know, but also at the same time, very light. Like, it looks like people are just splattering ketchup right. on them, but they're getting shot in the head.
But the thought of it's like, it's almost like watching, like, I don't know, like a violent marionette show or something.
Yes.
Like, people are, like, are fucking while they get shot, too.
Oh, yeah. The people are finally feeling stuff again.
Yeah.
And that's what I was saying.
Yeah.
It's like, you don't need anything to be really violent to be. That was the most disturbing thing to see. Fucking people,
begging for their own death.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, exactly. Like everybody wanting to die. Like,
kill me next.
Yeah, to be set free.
And then
that's the only truly, you know, the true way to live.
To be able to die. But while they're all shooting with these like old school revolvers or big guns, the thing that made me laugh is just a weird thing was there's a beautiful house that they're in front of. And they very rarely go in this house, but there's like these giant balloons attached to the outside of the house. And when they're shooting everybody, all of a sudden the balloons just explode as if the house is like wired with explosive. And I did not understand where that, like, what justified the house to blow up.
I thought maybe a couple of them went in there and like lit on fire. I don't know.
And the plants were definitely talking too at a certain point when he first lands in that thing. He touches a bag and it's plants and the plants like,
ooh. Oh, yeah. Yeah. We never revisit that. I forgot about that. How about when the girl has like the seed put in her forehead? All of a sudden, they got a slit in their forehead.
Oh, God, this movie just is dumb.
I thought that he would have to crack everybody's forehead. He does, by the way, everybody, get inside a crystal. And Sean Connery does some of the best mime work in this movie. He's always falling down slides, laying on tables. But he just basically runs around a hall of mirrors.
Is that him when he goes down that hill? When he slides down that hill.
Oh, yeah. I
think that's him, he really is he is a fucking badass.
Oh, yeah. I think he's.
But.
Gives zero fucks, this guy. Like, he is. He's like, yeah, I'll fucking do it.
Wait,
like,
why did he shoot himself in the mirror, and why did that face turn into his face?
Because I think it was the helmet that he usually wears.
Yes.
And then the helmet's removed, and he realizes, you know, basically by killing anyone else, he's killing himself.
He's Empire. That's the Empire Strikes Back moment when Luke goes to strike down Vader and realizes he is Vader. He's the man behind the mask.
And then he wakes up on the desk.
Yeah.
You know, he's a lot of Sean Connery. Homeroom.
Yeah. Sean Connery, a lot of him laying down on like obelisks, and weird when they're examining. he's in positions that men should never be in.
The what?
The mirror budget?
Oh, yeah.
This movie is top-to-bottom mirrors.
Do you think that the mirror people and the plastic people had a wager on who would be working harder on the movie?
I just want to see the first production meeting. So people just asking questions. So, like, how big is the tarp? And we're putting a what? We put an embryo in the tarp, and we'll make the bread. The bread machine will just put in the Play-Doh, and it will come out fully formed bread.
The bread will be green. The bread will be green. Why is the bread green? You're fired! Get out of here! No second guessing me, fuckhead!
And now for,
I was
and
nominated
now,
for deliverance.
Me from wardrobe. Now, for the women, you want them just wearing kind of not quite vests, but just something that ties around the neck and covers their breasts a little bit,
In case Sean tries to decides to grab one or throw one down or hit one in the face, it can easily fly off and show their perfect tits.
Yes, I want tits to be flying akimbo. Yes, absolutely. And you want everybody on their heads to be wearing what it looks like when you take a T-shirt off, but you leave it still on your head, kind of flapping.
Yes,
you
like it.
Well, yes, cross between that and a baker's hat.
two little things in here just to get you in the idea of what's going on in this movie. To keep production costs down, Sean Connery used his own car and drove himself to production every day. And Borman gave him half the money budgeted to hire a driver to Sean Connery. Sean Connery also lived in Borman's house during the shooting of this movie and would write poetry every night. And then this is another little thing, too, that Borman put himself in the movie as an extra, where he gets shot by Connery. But I guess the blank misfired and wadding got caught in his head. So he was shot and had shrapnel in his head for days working on this movie.
Do you think that 1 a.m., like Sean Connery woke John Borman up, like, John, are you asleep?
I'm sorry to wake you. Can I read you something I've been working on? I'm sorry, John. What is it? What is it, Sean? What is it? I've been working on a little poem, and I was thinking maybe I could read it to you. What? All right, fine, Sean. What is it? Hit a bitch, there a bitch. Hit a bitch everywhere. Everywhere, hit a bitch. Hit a bitch, bitch a snitch.
We'll put it in the movie.
Wonderful. That's brilliant, Sean. Yes, right.
We will 100% put it in the movie.
It's what's in my soul, John. It's what's in my soul. Yes, I realize that, Sean.
The worst conversations were at the dinner table during the shooting of this movie. Just the most heady but not heady conversations.
Oh, and this is like misogyny run amok.
It's crazy. Amazing. It's so insane. It's just like women are there to fuck. It's so... Yeah. Crazy.
And they want it. They don't think they want it, but they want it.
This is the other thing. All the women have Princess Leia's haircut. They all have the buns on the side of their ears.
Yes, right.
And all of the men have one of Rod Stewart's haircuts.
Yes.
And except for Sean Connery,
right,
who swaggers in like a fucking badass with his ponytail and mustache, and every woman, like, drops pants for
they're
him.
They're ready yeah. to go, because he's ready to go. I mean, he's raw sexuality. Because all the men that are in the vortex are real fey. Yes.
You know, they're, like, they're clean-shaven, they have Rod Stewart haircuts.
They have names like Friend.
Yes.
They don't have chest hair. He is a hairy man who comes in, and all the women are like, ooh, yeah, let's get with that.
With his gun. He pretty much has that gun in his hand and just recklessly is shooting at people.
If hairy men were a race, I would say that this film was racist. I mean, it's really like the hairy man is a sexy fucking animal. Oh, fucking fuck anytime you want him to.
You got any of that hairy man porn, you know, where these women just want to be taken by a hairy man?
White on hairy man. You got any white on hairy?
With a ponytail, too. Hairy man.
How I wish June was here for this part of the conversation.
Oh, my God. I am so upset for her because we watched this, and she has so much to say. So much to say, which, like I said, the opening line, she said, this movie makes me nauseous. And just would look at Sean Connery and go, flab.
You know,
I get really
upset with people when I'm watching something like in their living room. I mean, of course, in a movie theater, but like when they start texting.
Oh yeah.
And I found myself like I would like start. I was just like, this is making me feel. This is filling me with so much anxiety. We had to watch it in two chunks.
Yeah. We had to watch the first hour of it. We took a break to watch The Bachelor, and we had to come back to it later. It was too much to take in.
I mean, I find like a Lars von Trier film or a Haneke film easier to watch than this. This just gave me so much more anxiety.
And they make much more narrative sense.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I mean, this movie is challenging. We have to destroy culture to create culture. Am I right? Anyway, Brett,
I don't know about that.
Destroy culture to create culture.
Okay. I don't know if that's what it's about.
It's Godspell meets hard sci-fi. We all were with it. Brett, I want to talk about your show that you have coming up this week. If you're listening right now, this week on Adult Swim, it is Friday at 12:30. So that's Friday going into Saturday at 12:30 on Adult Swim. This is a follow-up to your first Dinner with Friends with Brett Gelman.
Yeah, yeah.
Can you tell us, I mean, this is Dinner with Family with Brett Gelman, Brett Gelman's family. So, yeah.
I throw a 40th anniversary dinner and show for my parents to commemorate their 40th anniversary. I have them for dinner and then I film it for it to go on television. That's part of the gift to them. And then while we're filming them eating, I'm also performing a play based on my childhood and their marriage, where Tony Roberts and Patti LuPone play them.
This is the best. When I heard that it was Tony Roberts from the classic Woody Allen movies and done amazing stuff.
Both of them are two of
amazing.
My faves.
And Patti LuPone, who is just mind-blowingly amazing. I've seen her like perform.
I will say this. If you want to listen to something amazing, listen to Alec Baldwin's Here's the Thing interview podcast with Patti LuPone. It's an hour conversation between the two of them, and it's amazing.
She's one of the most incredible people I've ever met in my life.
Now,
and so is he.
So reaching out to them, I don't want you to spoil anything because I know, like, that's, yeah, but
right.
They have to be pretty fucking game to jump into this. Like, I mean, this is not like,
I think
it's like there's elements of just like, yeah, this is like out, this is,
oh,
yeah.
Me and Jason Wallner,
yes,
who wrote it with me and directed it, he, and is a good friend of all
yes.
of ours.
Director of Human Giant.
Director of Human Giant, co-writer of Human Giant.
Yes, co-writer. Fourth member.
we were amazed that they said yes. I mean, it is I think it is some of the most disturbing things that is under the umbrella of comedy that's ever been on television. I think I can say that. It is a truly dark work.
This
and,
Friday.
But we got them. You know, I think that doing theater, I mean, they came up in the theater, and yes, by television standards, or definitely comedy, half-hour comedy, it's very, very disturbing, but not by theater standards necessarily.
Right.
I mean, these are people who know playwrights like Sam Shepard and Edward Albee and, you know, Harold Pinter that do really, write really dark stuff sometimes. So I think they.
So you're comparing yourself to Edward Albee? What's happening here?
Of course. I mean, you know, you have to kill your heroes, man. You have
Sam
to.
Sam Shepard,
just like in Zardoz,
right?
Just like in Zardoz, you got to kill these guys.
Exactly. Exactly. You need to kill in order to live.
I am a big fan of the first one. If you haven't seen the first one, you can get it on Adult Swim online.
Yeah.
You should definitely watch it. And
this
then,
is darker than the first one.
I can't wait. I'm a huge fan of Jason. I'm a huge fan of Brett. And when they get together, it goes really, really dark.
Yeah. Watch it alone. Watch it alone, people.
So definitely check that out. It's a Dinner with Family with Brett Gelman and Brett Gelman's family with, Patti LuPone. It's like amazing.
And Tony Roberts.
Tony
Roberts. I couldn't believe it.
So amazing.
It was like we were,
two days.
They did a 17-hour shoot. It's insane.
Amazing. So that is what you can do with Brett. You can follow him on Twitter at Brett Gelman, right?
Yeah, at Brett Gelman.
You can follow us at HDTGM. Jason, you want to plug anything?
No, I'm good.
Yeah, I don't think I want to plug anything either. How about that? All right.
Nice work.
Oh, you know what? I do. Actually, I do. I'm on a new show called Fresh Off the Boat on ABC, and you should watch it. It's really funny, and it's really good. Randall Park.
The show I'm on.
Randall Park from The Interview, who plays Kim Jong-un. He's fantastic.
The great Randall Park.
The great Randall Park. So good. Based on Eddie Wong's memoir, Fresh Off the Boat. I think it's really good. And I'm only have a small part in it, but I'm in a few of them. I think you'll like it. I really think it's really good. I'm going to read you that Nietzsche thing, so stay tuned. Brett, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. It was so fun. So I want to do so much. This is so fun. This is great.
I'm so glad to have you.
Thank you.
Jason, thank you from Atlanta for
calling
in.
I'll talk to you soon.
Talk to you soon. Okay, everybody. So Brett and Jason are gone, and it's just you and me talking about Nietzsche. This is a 5-star review from Amazon written by S. Maratu from Bristol, England. Let's see how it goes. How little sense this movie made the first time I saw it. Those goofy costumes, that strange plot. But for all the weirdness, I could never forget it. It remained in a corner of my head. And then, the second time I had the occasion to see Zardoz, everything fell into place. Like H.G. Wells' Time Machine, Zardoz was a sci-fi interpretation of Nietzsche's philosophy. The plot, in a few words, mankind is doomed because it's crumbling under the burden of its own historical consciousness. Remember the ruined library in the beginning? Most of the men have been wiped out by a World War-type catastrophe. Their descendants have fallen back into animality, struggling to survive in their brutish conditions and revering the titan-like Zardoz. Meanwhile, literally preserved in a bubble are happy the last few men, a bunch of superior spirits who have discovered the secret of immortality, or so they believe. But the secret is quite awful. Immortality is sterility. Of course, the immortals are playing a losing hand. Nietzsche didn't like the last men, the ones who come after history's pendulum movement has spent itself and come to a standstill. Apparently happy, apparently dominating, the dwindling bunch of immortals feel like prisoners in their pastoral bubble, and the only way out for them is the sweet oblivion of senility. Now, just a stylistic comment. The immortals are dressed in 70s futuristic gear. The senile old farts don Edwardian formal dress. The movie was not about some hypothetical future situation. It was about the here and now of 70s Britain. Senile establishment, the futile youth with the illusion that they will forever be young, and the starving third world knocking at the gates of the bubble. Also, in, and I'm going to mispronounce this, Spak Zarathustra, Nietzsche tells us the savior is an Übermensch, a superman who will shake off the sterility of the last men to push them back into the meaningful and necessary movement of history, launching a new cycle where others pretend there was only a single line from beginning to end with progress in between. Incidentally, a new cycle means both shedding the illusion of immortality and recovering the capacity to procreate, hence the final scene of the movie. It's interesting to see that how the catastrophic vision of the future has receded since the 70s. The obsession with Western societies and the illusion of eternal youth has only grown stronger. I can't think of another movie so laden with deep and cryptic philosophical metaphors, even more stunning as it is quite entertaining without possessing an MA in philosophy. So that is how the movie is a perfect Nietzschean film. I kind of found it interesting as I read it there. It moved quicker than I thought. I apologize for any weird punctuation. There's none punctuation in here, so I have to kind of go with it. All right, that is that. We will see you next week on How Did This Get Made?
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio, boom.com. The wolf dead.